Hey, it's Jackson. I am so excited for you to listen to this very special edition of the podcast because here's what happened. John had to take the day off. He couldn't find someone to watch his kids for Columbus Day. I didn't even know kids got Columbus Day off. It was a whole thing. But that meant that there was no new podcast episode for you. So what we did is we put together two interviews with some very interesting people. The first one, Chip Coffey, who was the resident medium psychic on Paranormal State. So if you ever watched Paranormal State, you definitely saw Chip Coffey. He also had his own show on A&E called Psychic Kids, and he's just hilarious. So we got to talk to him before his appearance up at the Paranormal Expo. And then stick around right after because we have another awesome interview that we got to get to. But for now, here's Chip Coffey.
Tell me about when did you realize that you actually had like psychic ability?
Actually, I didn't realize it until I was told. I was told that as a child, as a toddler, I would be doing my thing, playing around, and all of a sudden I would stop what I was doing and look at the phone, and the phone would ring shortly thereafter. And then I would, as I became verbal, I would know who was going to call. I'd say a name. And so I was kind of like an early version of caller ID, which is kind of cool. It was kind of cool.
Amazing.
I should be rich because of that, but not necessarily. And then I just sort of knew things about people, places, and things.
Yeah.
And so it's just sort of progressed. I lived in a haunted house as a kid, and weirdness has always just kind of followed me around. People ask me all the time, how does this work? I don't have a clue.
Yeah.
It just
I don't.
For you.
It just does. And I think it does for all of us. I mean, I think we all can agree that weird things happen in the world around us, unexplainable things all the time. And I think most of us have had those things happen
sure.
to us. And there's just no plausible explanation for it. It is what it is.
Do you think kids are more open to psychic experiences than adults?
Oh, I do. Think about how cluttered our lives have become as adults.
Right. They're still kind of more simple.
Yeah. And there's no, you know, it's not complicated. Kids tend to, I mean, it's more complicated for kids because I have godchildren and they're, you know, at 3 years old, they're playing their iPhones better than I am.
Right. Yeah.
They know how to do technology better than I do. But I hope we don't lose that simplicity. I hope there's still an element of that to where we can still tap into some of this stuff and not lose it.
Is it exhausting? Because not only are you then experiencing the energies that are around you right now, but obviously you're open to other energies that are out there. So like, are you like, oh man, I want to be left alone.
I'm lucky that I can shut it off.
Oh, you can.
I can, absolutely, because I don't want it to intrude in my life 24/7.
Yeah.
It's like you work and you do a great job here on the radio.
Yeah.
But when you leave, you're like, I want to just go live my life.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because sometimes I think we even drive home in the quiet. You turn the radio off. Just be with it for a minute.
No people, more noise.
People ask me, and I don't know if I should admit this openly, but they say, oh, you must watch all the paranormal shows on TV. I can't. It's like, you know the term busman's holiday? It's like a bus driver doesn't want to go on a bus trip when he's on vacation.
Right. Sure.
I don't necessarily want to immerse myself in that when I'm just trying to lead my life. You know, I have friends and family and a dishwasher to unload and all that stuff.
You gotcha. Know? Are you like a doctor? Like when someone sees a doctor at a party, they go over to him, they corner him, and they start asking about all their physical ailments that are out there. Do you have the same thing with you?
Yeah.
I bet. Yeah.
And you know what my response is? I'm off the clock. I'm about as psychic as a rock right now because I've just shut it off. I can't do it, you know. And I don't think it's fair to do it all the time because, you know, I'm here hanging out with you guys and having a great time and socializing. And I don't want stuff intruding in on that.
No. Sure.
If it's supposed to get through to me, if it will prevent an emergency or a tragedy or something like that, then I think my spirit partners who kind of stand guard over that stuff will let it come through if it's for the higher good. But, you know, otherwise I'm not assaulted by it constantly. I'm real grateful for that.
That's fantastic.
You mentioned spirit partners. I've heard before with psychics, they have a spirit partner, a spirit guide.
Yeah.
Is it the same one for you always?
We generally have multiples.
Okay.
And I think that a lot of them either are guides or are guardians, which are kind of like we call them guardian angels. I know we all have them.
Mm-hmm.
And I think most of them stay with us for our entire lives. But I think depending on what we're working on or our needs or whatever, some might float in to teach us other lessons or to kind of nudge us in the right direction, hopefully. But we do have those people that work with us, those energies that work with us from spirit, and they're there for our higher good.
Yeah. You say love never dies.
Love never dies.
So once someone passes on, they still love us the same?
You're going to pull an Oprah on me and make me cry right here on the radio. You are.
I feel like he's trying, huh?
I know he is. He's really like pushing a button here. You know, I think as we get older, we all lose someone we love.
Yeah.
And that connection, death changes relationships. It doesn't necessarily end them. And I am a firm believer that we shouldn't be ringing up our dead relatives all the time, because I don't. People are like, oh, you must talk to your mom and dad all the time. They both passed. No, they're dead for a reason. They've moved on to a different level of existence. But every now and then, it's just kind of nice. It's just kind of nice to continue to feel the love, isn't it?
Yeah.
It really is.
Yes.
You don't want to think of that as being finite. You want to think of that as being infinite. And I think there's something very beautiful about that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's going to be Chip Coffee from A&E and, again, Psychic Kids, the Utah Paranormal Expo. You can go to eventbrite.com, and I know you can get tickets there. And tonight, again, Ben Hansen, who I heard was 11 feet tall.
at least.
He's going to be at the Haunted Fort Douglas. And since I'm going to record, I'm going to ask, how do you get tickets for the thing tonight?
Same place, Eventbrite.
Oh, same thing. You can get tickets online at eventbrite.com. And Chip tomorrow, he's there. He's not going to just be giving you readings, okay? He's going to be like a rock.
Yeah.
He's there to talk to you.
I'm going to be there to laugh with you and just have a good time. That's awesome. That's what we're there for.
Right.
We were excited to hear that you're coming in. There's a lot of people who are in our office who watched your show and were like,
I appreciate that.
Yeah, who were like, oh, are you kidding me? He's coming in this morning. So
that weird guy's in there. Uh-oh.
No, I actually did have a question. So I watched your show, was a big fan. I'm also a big fan of American Horror Story. I don't know if you've ever watched it. Roanoke.
I know where you're going.
You know, with Leslie
you
Jordan's
know that's
character.
Me.
That's
it's
Cricket.
Me.
You're Cricket.
It's me.
That's hilarious. So you know about it. You're aware.
Leslie Jordan. I was supposed to do a movie once.
Uh-huh.
And Leslie Jordan was supposed to play my husband in the movie. And the movie never happened, which I thought was kind of funny. Yeah, but wouldn't that be a hoot? The two of us together?
You would have been great. And had you been husbands, and then he went and like parodied you in American Horror Story. That's hilarious.
Get a scarf. That's all I ask of them. I'm known for my scarves. If you're going to do it, get it right. Wear a scarf. Well, here's something I'll give you guys. The energy in this room is great.
Oh, good.
And from this standpoint, you know, really positive, really good energy.
We were questioning that rabbit over there. Yeah. It's hysterical.
I found this rabbit on the side of the road.
That rabbit's possessed. That rabbit's possessed. It's evil. We need to turn it over for immediate blessing. And Greta, do you have holy water? Greta's my assistant. Greta, do you have holy water in your bag over there, I think?
Okay, great. I'm so glad. Because it's cute, but I was very concerned about it. It looks evil.
It's gonna hop right up on you.
Yeah.
It's gonna hop, hop, hop.
Yeah,
Chip Coffee.
This is why you don't pick things up off the street, because it turns out that it's possessed. That was psychic medium Chip Coffee from A&E's Psychic Kids. Now, if you have not seen The Conjuring, it is probably in my top five favorite horror movies. You know I'm a horror movie junkie. It's had a few spinoffs like The Nun and Annabelle, but the first movie is all about a family who gets haunted in a giant mansion, and the crazy part is it's based off of true stories from ghost hunters Ed and Lorraine Warren. And we were lucky enough to get one of the little girls who lived in the house during the haunting while the Warrens investigated. Her name is Andrea Perrin, and you have got to hear some of the crazy stuff that happened to her in this house.
Andrea, there is a movie based off of you and your family.
Yes. The film was released in July of 2013. It's called The Conjuring. I think I know six people in the whole country that haven't seen it.
Yeah, I was going to say to you, like, it probably is one of the most successful, popular horror flicks out there.
It's one of my favorites.
Yeah.
Of all time. Excellent. Yeah.
And it's based off of your life.
Yes. About 5% of it is true.
Okay.
The rest of it was conjured in the minds of two lovely screenwriters who had my permission to use elements of our story directly from my books. I wrote three books, a trilogy called House of Darkness, House of Light. And they wanted to. And I mean, James Wan read the books. Everybody, all the production staff, all the actors, everybody read the books. And they were so excited because they thought, well, this is going to be something that's never, ever been on screen before.
Yeah.
The fear-based carbon units at Warner Brothers sent the script back 7 times and said, take this out, take that out, take that out. We can't make a movie where people will not even stay till the end to watch it.
Because it was so scary the first time.
So they toned it so far down that it's virtually unrecognizable to our story.
Really?
The names are the same. That's it.
Yeah. So for those who maybe have not seen The Conjuring before, maybe it's been a few years, your parents bought a house.
Yes. In 1970, my mom found the house in June of 1970. It was an estate, 200 acres, original colonial farmhouse. The land was deeded in 1680 by Roger Williams, the founder of the colony.
Wow. Long history then,
yes.
Which would explain some of your experiences. What are some of your like early experiences in the house?
Well, when you think about it, 8 generations of one extended family lived and died in that house prior to our arrival. And I would say at least a dozen of them either never left or visited so regularly that they became peripheral members of our family. And there was really only one spirit in the house that she loathed my mother, and she had a thing for my dad, and she coveted us, the 5 children, and she wanted my mother out of that house or dead. She didn't care which. And it was a really difficult time watching my mother deteriorate and the attacks that she went through. You know, that was one thing about the impression that The Conjuring leaves is that my mother was under siege. And that is a correct impression. Overall, the film, I think, does leave the correct impression. It covers in big, broad strokes, you know, the audience leaves feeling good conquers evil, love conquers fear. The parent family endured an extreme haunting that they all survived. But the film makes it look like we were there for, I don't know, like 2 weeks, and that the Warrens moved in with us and made everything better.
Right.
And you know, and it's all hugs and kisses and a family circle at the end, and nothing could have been further from the truth. My mother had to ask permission of the spirits to leave that house 10 years after we moved in. And the reason that we moved was because she approached my father and she said, Roger, I won't survive another winter in this house.
I want to talk about some of the hauntings, but since we're right here, why did your family stay so long?
Well, there are a lot of answers to that, probably about 100 of them. But the big answer is that we were supposed to. We were supposed to have that experience. And then 30 years later, after we left, I was supposed to tell this story.
Yeah.
And in retrospect, I can look back on it now and see that it all happened precisely the way that it was supposed to. But when we bought the house, my parents closed on the property in December of 1970. I had just turned 12 in October, and we moved in January of 1971 because my mom refused to move at Christmas. Imagine
sure,
that.
Of course.
And it was interesting because we visited the farmhouse at least 5 or 6 times before we actually owned it.
Okay.
And got to know what was at that time the current owner, Mr. Kenyon, and fell madly in love with him as he did with our family. We never had any supernatural activity that any of us could remember prior to the day that we moved in. And it was a swirling sleet and freezing rain and ice and snow storm going on, and we got there and Dad threw open the back of the van and he handed, I was a big girl even at 12, you know, I was strong like bull, and so he hands me this enormous box that says kitchen across the front. Well, my mother had taken my baby sister April into the house and she was in the kitchen waiting to receive boxes, so Dad says, take this to Mom. And so I went, it was so cold, I went into the closest door, which was the front door to the parlor. And then I took a hard right into the dining room, and Mr. Kenyon was packing up the last of his belongings. And I said, good morning, Mr. Kenyon. I was a well-raised, polite child. And then I saw another man standing in the corner, and I said, good morning, sir. And he did not respond to me at all. He looked right through me like I was invisible, and he was completely focused on Mr. Kenyon. And it didn't even occur to me that he was dead. I, I, he looked absolutely solid to me. And so he didn't respond, but I just walked past him with the box and took it to my mom. And I was like, Mom, who's that man with Mr. Kenyon in the dining room? And she said, oh, honey, there's nobody with him. His son's on the way. He's not here yet. And I was like, but. And then my sister Christine walked in and she's like, Mom, who's that man with Mr. Kenyon? He's dressed funny. Well, he was dressed with handmade clothes from the 1800s. We didn't know him yet. We found out who he was later. And then my sister Cindy walked in and she's like, Mom, there's a funny dressed man that's standing with Mr. Kenyon. My mother's like, what are you girls talking about? You know, we got the moving people and we got all, I mean, it was chaos, bedlam, you know, mayhem. It's moving day.
Right.
And so Mom was busy. April was right beside her. She didn't leave the room to go investigate what we were talking about. But then my sister Nancy walks in with her box and she leans over to Cindy and she says, did you see that man with Mr. Kenyon? I did, but he just disappeared right in front of my eyes.
Oh.
So four of the five children within 5 minutes of moving into that house were introduced to one of the primary spirits that dwelled with us for all those years.
Wow.
And interestingly, he vanished, but he came back about an hour later, and all of us were standing in the dining room, and it was when my father, realizing that Mr. Kenyon was so sad about leaving the house, asked him if he wanted to just stay and live with us, because the house was big enough that he could have lived with us. And he was just devastated because his son had built a little house on his property in the village. It was so remote, and he was worried about his elderly father, and he just wanted his dad close. But I don't think he understood the emotional attachment that Mr. Kenyon had to the property. And so my dad's asking him, you know, do you want to live with us? Do you want to stay with us? So all of a sudden, as dad's asking him that, this full body apparition manifests again right in the exact same place that it was before.
Wow.
And all of us in the room saw him,
wow,
except my father and Mr. Kenyon. They didn't see him.
So Mr. Kenyon
all the children,
never saw the...
Well, that's interesting that you should ask that, because that day, later on, he came to my dad and he said, Roger, take a walk with me. So they went outside and he leans over and he takes my father's arm and he says, Roger, for the sake of your family, leave the lights on at night. Well, dad didn't understand what he was saying.
Yeah.
It didn't occur to him what he was trying to communicate. And he's thinking to himself, well, you know, I've got five little kids and this is a new house to them. There's only one bathroom. It's on the first floor and they all have to come down a set of stairs. So that would make sense to leave lights on in this big, vacuumous, dark farmhouse.
Yeah.
It didn't occur to him what he was trying to tell him. And about 3 or 4 weeks later, he came to visit. He missed his home and he wanted to see us. And my mother leaned over and she said, Earl, I'm hearing strange noises, strange sounds in the house. And he just leaned over and he patted her hand and he said, swallows in the chimney, my dear.
Oh, really?
He knew.
Yeah.
He just didn't want to be perceived as an elderly crazy person.
A kook,
You know? Yeah. And I mean, it was the 70s. You think this subject's taboo now. Huh. Go back 45 years.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So this was not something that got discussed. But we found out from people that lived in the area that there was never a time that they drove past that house, no matter what time of night, even the wee hours of the morning, that every single light in that house wasn't on. It lit up the landscape. And we think that's how Mr. and Mrs. Kenyon held the activity at bay, or at least if something was going to happen, they
really
would see it.
So when you turned off the lights in the house, would the supernatural activity increase?
Nah, it happened. Nah. You know, it's funny because, like, the Warrens didn't come until 1973.
Uh-huh.
So we'd already been there a few years. And Mrs. Warren told me back in 2013, she said, you know, we knew about your house from Keith Johnson, who had been the first investigator there. He was just a teenager.
Mm-hmm.
He approached the Warrens and told them that we were in a predicament and where we lived, and that they didn't come until the night before Halloween of 1973. And Mrs. Warren told me 40 years later plus that the reason that they waited was because they thought the veil would be thinner at Halloween and they'd be more likely to see something. And I just looked at her and I said, Lorraine, then every day is Halloween at the farmhouse. Every day, every night.
Your father in the house, I read somewhere that he would not go down in the basement.
He didn't really like to go into the cellar. None of us did.
Yeah.
Because the spirit that was haunting and taunting my mother, she really had a thing for him. And every time he would go down into the cellar to fix some of the old rickety, beat up, like from the turn of the century mechanic
sure.
that he had running the house, she would touch him. She would run her fingernails along the back of his neck and then down his spine. And, you know, send a shudder through him. And the thing that's interesting is, I mean, our old, the equipment, the heater, the water heater, the, you know, everything that was down in the cellar, none of it ever broke down once unless my father was home.
Oh, she wanted him there.
She wanted him to come down into the cellar. And when I took him back to the farmhouse 30 years after we had moved out, I took him back. And the first thing she did was approach him in the cellar when he went down.
Oh, she remembered him.
Yep.
Wow.
Yeah.
Is it true that your mom actually, or was it your dad, you kicked the Warrens out?
He did. Well, first he punched Ed out.
Okay.
That didn't make the Conjuring.
Yeah,
I don't even know how they didn't make that. That was not in the Warren files.
Wow.
And of course, you know, the Conjuring was based on, the whole series is based on the case files of Ed and Lorraine Warren.
Right.
And you know, when James Wan, who's an aficionado of the paranormal and certainly of the Warrens, when he first read my books, he's like, how did I not know about this?
Yeah.
Well, he didn't know about it because my mother told Lorraine Warren in 1980, under no circumstances was she allowed to tell our story. We were moving out, we were moving on, and she didn't want anything to do with writing a book, making a movie, nothing.
Yeah. Is it true that you were part of, or you were witnessing the seance that was going on?
Oh, that was the worst. That was the worst night of my life. That was the worst experience of my life. And I thank God every day that my mother has no memory of it.
Really?
My mom wasn't possessed. My mother was attacked. And she was attacked accidentally. I don't believe that the Warrens ever did anything. My father thinks they came to our world to exploit us. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people think that. But I knew them well enough, I think. I knew their hearts.
Yeah.
And I don't think that their intention was to exploit us at all. I think that their intention was to help. But they were in over their heads right from the inception, from the moment they crossed the threshold. But what actually happened that night was so much more horrific than anything that you saw in The Conjuring, that it's all these years later still very difficult for me to describe. I was 15. Nothing that happened in that house should have happened in that house that night, certainly not with four of the five children in the house. And my dad had just come back from a trip. The Warrens had called earlier in the day and asked if they could stop by. Well, when Dad got home, all he wanted to do was put his feet up and watch a Red Sox game. That was it.
Yeah.
And when he heard the Warrens were coming, his head blew off. He went ballistic. He was like, nope, I'm done with these people. They're not doing anything. You know, I don't want them here. And my mother's, you know, cell phones weren't invented yet.
Right.
There was no way to intercept them.
Yeah.
So they showed up at the house, and they showed up with an entourage, including a priest, a medium, two cinematographers, an audiographer. Well, the medium, her name, I don't know if she's still alive or not, but her name was Mary Pastorella. And she made a critical error in judgment that night. And what she did was she conjured the spirits and threw open wide the doors to the netherworld in a supremely haunted house so that she could determine who the culprit was that was harassing my mother. Well, when she did that, something not of this world came through. And my mother, being the one that was oppressed in the house and really the weakest link at the table that night, it infiltrated my mother and it went into her, and all of a sudden she started growling like an animal and writhing in pain and screaming. And then she started talking in a language that does not exist on this planet. And her body drew up into a ball to the extent that you would expect to hear bones breaking. And then the 30-pound captain's chair made of solid rock maple that she was sitting in levitated off the floor. Now, this is after the table that was 300 pounds had lifted off the floor and then came back down onto it as if the hand of God itself had slammed a fist into the middle. There are still 4 indentations in that floor to this day.
Really?
From where that table hit. But then that's when her chair began to lift and the priest jumped away from the table. He went over into the corner, turned as white as that building, and just started to tremble from head to toe. And I had a bird's eye view. I had a crack in a door that wide, but I could see everything that was happening. And my mother was levitated in that chair a good 2 feet off the ground. And in a fraction of a second, she was thrown from the middle of our dining room into the middle of our parlor. And everyone present in that house, no matter what floor of that house, heard her skull hit the floor that night. Oh. And everyone there thought we had just watched her die.
Oh, my God.
And then Ed made a really big mistake and tried to stop my father from running to my mother and grabbed his arm. Oh. And my father turned around and cold-cocked a man twice his size and took him to the floor, broke his nose. I know at 2 o'clock that morning, I was down with a bottle of peroxide and a terry cloth trying to get the blood out of the wood floor.
Yeah.
It knocked my mother out. They told us not to call the police and not to call an ambulance. They told all the kids to go back upstairs. They did not want anybody, any authority, to know what had happened. Meanwhile, my father, in language that I would never dare to repeat on your beautiful air,
Thank you.
dismissed them.
Yeah.
Summarily dismissed them from the house. They came back. I guess they looked to make sure his car was gone a few months later. And they came to the door and seemed quite relieved to see my mother answer the door.
Gosh.
That she was still alive, because they did not know when they left. But the thing that happened while that was happening on the first floor of the house, the cinematographers had taken their big, huge, state-of-the-art cameras and massive tripods and had set everything up in the cellar of the house, because the cellar was so active.
Mm-hmm.
They figured if they're going to do a seance upstairs, they might pick something up. Well, they went down. Lorraine told them to go get their equipment, that they were leaving. And those two full-grown men came upstairs sobbing. Their cameras were in thousands of pieces all over the cellar floor. There was nothing to salvage. They went out the kitchen door
and
put themselves in the van and never came back.
Wow.
That's wild.
I just gave you 1% of 1% of what happened in that house over the course of 10 years.
I can't believe you were in there for so long.
Yeah.
What are the names of the books?
House of Darkness, House of Light.